It's time to eat.
What are you hungry for?
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Joe Dolan.
Feed me now! I'm starving!
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby! It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast, presented, of course, by DraftKings. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, 5 teams, 7 years, classic journeyman. Now I got a bunch of different gigs, love calling games, caught a little maction. It was time for some maction last night between Akron and Eastern Michigan, but I'm back at it. Already posted college draft podcast this morning. Already posted the Ross Tucker football podcast, which was awesome. We had Matt Kalish, one of the DraftKings founders and the president of DraftKings North America, to talk about Rainmakers, which everybody, you need to check out today's Ross Tucker football podcast, because if you're into fantasy football and if you're listening or watching this show, you are. Check out the interview on today's Ross Tucker football podcast. That Rainmakers combines basically like Dynasty, DFS, NFTs, all in one. Very, very cool. Almost as cool as Joe Dolan at FG_Dolan. He is the fantasy gangsta. You need to check out his work at fantasypoints.com. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL on social. We're at Ross Tucker Pod, and we're giving away autographs to somebody that rates and reviews the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever, and then sends me an email this week, ross@rosstucker.com. The way Joe looks right now, and with the way his hat is positioned, he looks like he's hungover or on a bender of sorts. How are you, Joe?
Oh, Ross, I was up late last night for reasons. I'm just trying to get through the day. Let's just say I just did not get my normal sleep share last night. Let's put it that way. Without getting into too much detail, not hungover, just exhausted.
Well, Joe, I called a game in Akron that ended at 11. I got home at 4:30 and slept from 4:40 to 6:40 before I was on the radio and WIP radio at 7 a.m. So I slept 2 hours. So you know what that means, Joe? Suck it up, buttercup.
Hey, that's what I'm doing. I'm here.
There's no way you got less. Did you get less than 2 hours?
I bet you didn't. No. Hey.
It doesn't matter.
Rise and grind. Yeah.
What is a contest is winning when it comes to fantasy football. You help me win, Joe. You help all of us win. Love the insight. Love the stats. Love the information. Love the show that's so nice. We do it twice. We'll get to the Thursday night game as well as the Sunday 1 o'clock games and the Sunday morning. Guten Tag in Germany. Use the code 22FEAST, by the way, at fantasypoints.com. Thursday night, though, first up, Joe, it's a game that I swear they just played yesterday.
They did.
Falcons-Panthers.
2 weeks ago, that was the wild P.J. Walker throw to D.J. Moore at the end of the game, and then the helmet toss, and then all that crap. And now they're going back to P.J. Walker, Carolina, despite his atrocious performance last week. We know P.J. Walker's not the long-term answer here, but Baker Mayfield probably proved he wasn't the long-term answer here either. And they're not activating Sam Darnold yet. So, or at the very least, are not going to play Sam Darnold yet. Here's the good news. Walker has attempted 90 passes this season. 29 of them have been targeted at D.J. Moore. Now, of course, when P.J. Walker goes 3 of 10 for 9 yards and 2 picks, it doesn't matter how many times he throws the ball to D.J. Moore. But at the very least, Walker's given D.J. Moore some life. We know Deontay Foreman has had some big games, including a couple weeks ago against the Falcons. Now, here is the problem, though. What I saw from the Panthers last week in that drubbing by the Bengals was kind of what I had anticipated seeing from this backfield, just like a bad offense that can't get anything going on the ground. And then Deontay Foreman produces 7 carries for 20 yards. He loses 2 yards as a receiver. There's two guys you can consider for Carolina. And Chuba Hubbard might be back this week, by the way. But there's two guys you can consider for Carolina, Deontay Foreman and DJ Moore. And that's it. You've seen the downside for both of them if P.J. Walker doesn't play well.
Atlanta Tough team to figure out. It's Cordero's back. It's the Cordero and Algier show.
Yeah, Cordero. Now, Cordero is somebody who I'm actually excited to play. I would think his snaps go up. By the way, the good news is Cordero Patterson got 4 of their 5 goal line carries. The other one went to Caleb Huntley. So Cordero Patterson punching in those 2 touchdowns, including the one where he ran over Drew Tranquil. Tranquilized him, you might say, Ross.
Nice, nice.
That's going to get him more touches going forward. I really like Cordero Patterson this week. Here's the fact of the matter. Marcus Mariota is just crushing Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Just crushing them. I mean, Kyle Pitts last week had like 150 air yards and like 20 actual yards receiving. I don't know if you saw him wide open down the field and Marcus Mariota's throwing a hot air balloon up there. He's just crushing these guys. We're in week 10, Ross. It's no longer, Kyle Pitts will figure out. This is happening. Like, maybe something changes. Maybe they go to Desmond Ridder at some point. They're still in contention for the division, so I don't think they're going to do that. It's just London and Pitts are both on your bench. I mean, that's where we're at right now, Ross. Week number 10. And one more thing to throw out there. I know we post this after waivers run, but I've been getting some questions. How much fab should I use? Guys, it's week 10. You probably should have used most of it already. But if you have Josh Allen in a super flex league, how much fab should you use on Case Keenum? All of it. This is not time to be dilly-dallying. You've got to try to make the playoffs. Your fab, it's time to just spend it up. We are heading down the stretch for the playoffs. Sorry, Ross. I know we'll talk about Allen later, but at this point, what I'm trying to say is we start to know what our playoff rosters are going to look like. Doesn't mean you stop grinding the waiver wire, but it's been a waiver wire that's been a little empty in the last couple of weeks.
Totally agree. Let's move on to the Sunday morning game. Guten Tag. It's Seattle against the Bucks in Munich.
So the big question for me with the Bucks, and you know what to do with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. I know it hasn't been pretty. Brady's throwing the ball 58 times, and he's under 300 yards passing. But you kind of got to play those guys. The big question for Tampa Bay right now is what's going on with the backfield. Leonard Fournette, visibly frustrated. Tracy Wolfson brought this up on the broadcast. Visibly frustrated that Rashad White was in there on a 10-play drive. Rashad White, of all people, had to go over and calm Leonard Fournette down. Tampa Bay's run game has been appallingly bad. I think part of that is on the fact that Byron Leftwich is calling a very uncreative, predictable scheme, running on first and 10 into the backs of his offensive linemen constantly. And I don't think that's helping matters, but I do think they might start to get Rashad White a little more work. Rashad White is a viable flex right now. Leonard Fournette, I'm not saying you bench him, but they might be looking for a spark in that run game. Let's see if they trust Rashad White more. That was a season-saving win for the Buccaneers, though. I'm wondering if they're going to start carrying some of that momentum forward. Brady was really fired up after that game. And one thing they should do, this is my theory with the Buccaneers. It's my why don't they build the entire plane out of the black box theory. The Buccaneers have only looked good offensively the last couple of weeks when they're in hurry up. Why don't you just run the K-gun? Hey, I'm not a coach, though.
Look, I've been saying that the Arizona Cardinals should do that all year. I mean, that's the best the Cardinals move the ball is when they're in 2 minutes. So I'm with you on that, Joe.
Yeah.
What about Seattle?
Look, I know it's tiring for – Seattle, I mean – I love Seattle because Geno's awesome. Now, here's the thing. Tampa Bay's run defense is going to improve for one major reason. They got Akeem Hicks back last week. They got Carlton Davis, their top cornerback. They got Sean Murphy Bunting back. So they're getting healthier on the defensive side of the ball. But Metcalf and Lockett are weekly starters. Geno is easily a top 10 quarterback each and every week. Here's what I loved about Geno. He threw that pick six. And this is a term that Greg Cosell calls selective amnesia. All right, I threw a pick six. I'm still going to go out there and sling it. Got him a victory. I just love the way Geno's playing football right now. Ken Walker's a must start in your backfield, but just keep in mind the return of Akeem Hicks has improved that Seattle defense. But, Seattle's been one of my favorite teams. It's just like, I think every year in the NFL and in fantasy, you got teams that, like, you just hate watching and you don't care if they lose. And then you've got teams that, like, you start to pull for because they're a good story and they're fun. Seattle's one of those teams for me. And the fact that they're paying dividends for my fantasy team also really helps. I love what Geno Smith's doing. I love Seattle. I have a hunch Tampa Bay's going to win this game, but I still think for fantasy purposes. Oh, and Noah Fant, by the way. Noah Fant starting to make some noise here as a move tight end. I think he's an interesting option this week.
Let's go to Buffalo, Joe, and let's talk about Labatt Blue Light because it's delicious. Oh, okay. It feels so good when it touches my lips. There's no better way to watch your team, whether it's the Bills or somebody else on game day, than with the pristine Canadian goodness. Love that word. I need to use the word pristine more often. Of a cold Labatt Blue Light in hand. My go-to light beer. Stock up and be the MVP of your tailgate and share a Labatt on game day with your crew. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Buffalo, New York, Joe, as you know, is where the Buffalo Bills reside. It's 11:13 a.m. on Wednesday. The latest from Rappaport that I saw was that they think, no sure thing that Josh Allen plays, but they think he might be able to manage it.
Yeah. Our guy, Edwin Porras, Dr. Edwin Porras, who he's at fantasypoints.com and he does our injury reports. He's actually a baseball physical therapist for the Minnesota Twins organization. And so he's familiar with UCL injuries. And he says he thinks there's a chance that if this is a grade one UCL sprain, Allen's playing. If there's a grade two, it's going to be harder for him to play. But it's Josh Allen. And he even said, even if there's a complete tear, there's a chance with rehab he could play through it. Believe me, if there was any NFL quarterback you were to tell me is going to play through a UCL tear, Josh Allen would be like my 1 through 5 on that list. Josh Allen is a blockhead in all of the right ways. Like, that guy's going to jump in front of a bus if it's going to get him a touchdown, and he's going to play through an elbow injury if it's going to get him a touchdown. The question is, do the Bills decide, let's be smart about Josh Allen and let's sit him down a week? But the fact that there's a chance he practices on a Wednesday is probably a good sign for his availability. But here is the thing with the Bills that we brought up. It's like, it's so weird that Josh Allen is like this dominant fantasy football asset. And really, that team has only one super trustworthy option outside of Allen, that being, of course, Stephon Diggs. Gabe Davis has been boom or bust. He's been above 16 points in 3 games, but he's been below 8 in 4. Dawson Knox is touchdown dependent. The backfield now is up in the air. Nyheim Hines got there. He only played 4 snaps on offense. Because he said it was tough for him to pick up the playbook on a short week, but you would think his snaps are going to go up going forward. And if Josh Allen's not 100%, remember, over the last 6 quarters, he has no touchdown passes and 4 interceptions. So even without the elbow injury, he's in kind of a little mini slump. This is an offense that's a little bit concerning on a micro level for this particular matchup against Minnesota, because I'm not really sure how they're going to mix in Hines. You know, Davis has been up and down. Diggs, of course, you trust each and every week, but I'm just a little bit concerned with this when it comes to Josh Allen and the fact that he hasn't been playing to his standards for a game and a half.
Moving on, Joe, let's get to the Vikings side of this.
So the Vikings, you know how I love the Vikings every week, yes. But there is a new part of this offense, and it's one that we saw. They traded 2 day 2 picks for TJ Hockenson. Well, a short week. I just said Nyheim Hines. He didn't pick up the playbook. He said it was a little difficult for him. Well, the Vikings were able to get TJ Hockenson involved. He played 91% of the snaps, which was the most of any Viking tight end this year. Irv Smith had never gotten to that point. Johnny Munt had never gotten to that point. He got 9 targets. He caught all of them. And from Fantasy Points data, 2 of the 9 targets for Hockenson were designed targets. And what that means is this is a play call that the ball is going only one, like a screen or a pop pass or like a shovel pass would be what we would call a design target. The ball's going one place. And 2 of the 9 targets for TJ Hockenson were designed. He hadn't seen a designed target in Detroit since week 1. So the Vikings had a plan for TJ Hockenson. This is a guy who must be in your lineups going forward. There are not 5 or 6 tight ends better for fantasy than TJ Hockenson. That usage was so encouraging from him. The Vikings traded for him because they had a plan for him, and they already executed that plan even on a short week.
Interesting. All right. His former team, the Lions, struggled offensively. They got the win. They play Justin Fields and the Bears. Is Justin Fields a league winner for people?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He's averaging 8.7 designed carries per game over the last 3 weeks. He was at 3.5 in the first 6 weeks of the season. And, you know, Matt Eberflus came out and he said, oh, over the bye week, we started studying like the Bills offense and the Ravens offense and the Eagles offense, like these offenses that utilize mobile quarterbacks. My question for Eberflus is, why wasn't that the case when you took the job? You knew Justin Fields was going to be your quarterback. This guy's an elite athlete. Like you can think this is what Justin Fields is going to be forever. You can think it's a blip on the radar. You can be up on him. You can be down on him. But even guys who are down on Justin Fields and don't think this is his real ceiling or real floor, whatever you want to call it, the one thing you got to admit is the dude is freaking talented. He can zip the ball and he can move. Like, he is a big-time runner. This has just been – he's absolutely a league winner. Getting him on the move has raised his confidence. They're starting to get Cole Kmet involved as part of the passing game plan. He's got 3 touchdowns the last 2 weeks. It just seems that, like, some of these things that we were optimistic about with the Bears, Justin Fields' athleticism, Cole Kmet, maybe being the second best target on the team, it just took 8 weeks for that to come to fruition. And you know what? We can criticize Eberflus, Luke Getsy, whatever, for their offensive game plan early in the season. All we ask, first-time head coach, first-time offensive coordinator, fix it. They fixed it. And right now, it's leading to Bears fans being justifiably optimistic about their future with Justin Fields. And, you know, say what you want about Chase Claypool. I didn't love that trade. But they went out and got him another weapon to go with Darnell Mooney and now Cole Kmet. You know, things are looking up for the Bears. They're not going to make the playoffs. They don't have that level of talent. But the future's looking a lot brighter than it did a month ago. I'll say that.
What about the Lions on offense, Joe?
Well, the big concern here is what's going on with DeAndre Swift. You know, 2 weeks ago, he got 55% of the snaps, and Dan Campbell was like, man, I think we pushed him too hard. DeAndre Swift said after that game 2 weeks ago, I don't know if I'm going to be 100% the rest of the season. That came to fruition. He played 16% of the snaps. He was running as the number 3 running back on his own team. After week 1 against the Eagles, before he got hurt, I think he got hurt at the end of that Eagles game, by the way. But before he got hurt, this guy looked like a guy who was going to be a top 5 running back on the season on an offense that was going to score a lot more points than people anticipated. And then obviously he got hurt. The Lions have had injuries everywhere, and things have sort of collapsed for him. DeAndre Swift right now, maybe his snap share goes up. He's a flex, and you have to hope he probably scores on a passing play because they're not going to give him goal line carries. Jamal Williams leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns. So that's the kind of the bummer for DeAndre Swift. I will say this, though. I really do like the matchup for Amon-Ra St. Brown. The Bears slot corner is rookie Kyler Gordon. He has started to clean it up after struggling early, but still, that is a matchup that I'm going to give the edge to Amon-Ra St. Brown in this matchup.
Let's get to the Jags and the Chiefs. You know what? We saw some life from our guy Trevor Lawrence. Best performance in a while. And Joe, I'm so glad we posted that on social media. You saying ETN was a star. Before now this week, everybody else is saying ETN's a star.
Well, I was screaming and yelling about it because I love Travis Etienne. I was like, when you posted that, I'm like, geez, Joe, can you quiet down a little bit? But I got really excited about Travis Etienne. Go listen to last week's podcast if you want to hear me wax poetic about Travis Etienne. By the way, the Chiefs' run defense has gotten a little bit better at the point of attack, but the Jaguars are going to do what the Jaguars do. For the Jaguars' passing game, I think it's worth noting that I don't believe Trent McDuffie, the rookie corner for Kansas City, who's played in two games so far, has given up a catch yet. You remember talking to Greg Cosell in the pre-draft podcast, obviously Emery as well, the way those guys talked about Trent McDuffie, the rookie corner out of Washington. Second rookie corner out of Washington we're talking about on this program because Kyler Gordon went there too. He's doing a really good job. That's going to be a tough draw for Trevor Lawrence. And here's one thing I want to watch, though, for the Jaguars. We just talked about Justin Fields. I do wonder if maybe Doug Peterson took a look at like a little bit of like Justin Fields. Hey, you know, Trevor, Justin Fields out there in Chicago, he's getting a little more comfortable because they're getting him on the move. You know, he's running a little more. Trevor Lawrence is coming off a game where he had a career high 53 rushing yards. I just wonder if those, he can move, but he hasn't, it hasn't been a big part of his weaponry in the NFL. I do wonder if that's going to be a bigger part of his game going forward, Trevor Lawrence on the ground. So that's something that I'm curious to see in this game. Also, keep an eye on Evan Engram, who has a back injury. I know he's somebody who people had been streaming at tight end. I think over the last 3 weeks heading into last week was like the tight end seven, but he left early with a back injury. They think he's going to be okay, but it is something to watch for the Jaguars if you've been streaming Evan Engram as your tight end.
What do we need to know, Joe, about the Kansas City Chiefs right now?
Well, first and foremost, our fantasy points data score has this as one of the five worst rushing matchups of the week for Kansas City. Now, it said the same thing last week against Tennessee, one of the five worst. And my takeaway was, that doesn't matter to Andy Reid. He doesn't run it anyway. They had 13 carries for 14 yards from their running backs. Patrick Mahomes led them in rushing from their running backs against Tennessee last week. You would just, if you play one of these running backs, and right now I think the best one is McKinnon because he caught six passes. I think it's McKinnon. Not sure. But, I mean, they just don't run the ball. And I don't think they're going to run it in this game against an exploitable secondary. I really don't. And right now, Travis Kelce's obviously the one truly reliable guy here, but Juju Smith-Schuster has come on and has started to produce. If Patrick Mahomes is going to throw 70 passes every game, Juju's going to get 10 catches. He's been the only reliable wide receiver there. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Mahomes throws 68 passes, gets one target. Forget about it. He's droppable. I'd much rather have Kadarius Toney on my roster than Valdez-Scantling right now. Toney played only 8 snaps and caught more passes than Valdez-Scantling in that game.
Wow.
I think his role is going to grow going forward. I'd rather have the Chiefs you roster right now. I think you can have, I mean, Edwards-Helaire, you need him to score. McKinnon, you hope they get into a game where they can't run the ball because he'll catch some. Pacheco is just getting empty calorie touches in a three-man rotation. It's Kelce and Juju and Mahomes who've got to be in lineups. I'm curious about keeping Toney on my bench, but it's kind of weird that just like with the Bills, this elite quarterback play, and there's not more than one or one and a half guys you trust in this offense. It's kind of bizarre.
Very bizarre. What about Cleveland and Miami? I think this is actually one of the sneaky, most interesting games of the day.
Yeah. Well, Ross, you're not alone there in thinking that. If you look at the projected over under, it's 48.5. That is one of the highest on the slate. Like the matchup, for the Cleveland Browns against Miami. And I kind of like Jacoby Brissett in this matchup, but there is one thing that needs to be pointed out. Our guy, Scott Barrett, who we've had on the Feast Pod, has long advocated and proven that Amari Cooper is one of the most shadow-sensitive receivers in football. When he gets tight shadow coverage, he often gets shut down. And the Dolphins, you know, Xavien Howard, as you know, is a shadow corner. He's faced 5 different receivers on more than 56% of their routes this season. but he's been exploitable. Four of those five receivers have gone for 36 or more yards. Rashad Bateman, Stephon Diggs, T. Higgins, and Justin Jefferson in Howard's primary coverage. So not their full stat line, but in his primary coverage. Both Bateman and Jefferson went for over 90 yards on him, while both Bateman and Higgins scored on him. So Xavien Howard has been an exploitable shadow corner this year. So what is going to give here in this matchup? Amari Cooper's historical tendency to wilt when he gets shadowed by a top corner, or the fact that Xavien Howard has been exploitable this year? I'm not really sure what the answer to that is, but I'm not sitting Cooper if he's in my lineup. It does, though, make me very interested in Donovan Peoples-Jones as a wide receiver three this week, somebody who's really been coming on for the Cleveland Browns, and especially if David Njoku can't play through his high ankle sprain this week.
On the other side, the Dolphins?
Well, Cleveland's had one of the most exploitable secondaries in the NFL. I love Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle every week. They're both like top five receivers. Tyreek Hill is on pace to be the all-time greatest receiver this year. And obviously Tua is a slam dunk QB1. The other big change for Miami, the one big change rather, they acquired Jeff Wilson at the trade deadline from the 49ers for a fifth-round pick, which is not nothing. Might have mentioned that on the pod last week, by the way. Well, in his first game with the Dolphins, and remember, he did not have to learn the offense because he played under Mike McDaniel in San Francisco. He paced Raheem Mostert in snap share, 50 to 46%, paced him in touches, 12 to 9, paced him in scrimmage yards, 72 to 26, on his way to 16.2 fantasy points. I wonder if they want Mostert to be the change of pace and they want Jeff Wilson to be the lead back, because Chase Edmonds was not it. They dumped Chase Edmonds off to the Broncos in the Bradley Chubb deal, and instantly got one of their best running back performances of the year with Jeff Wilson. I think Jeff Wilson, if you had him and you didn't drop him after the Christian McCaffrey trade, this trade to Miami completely rescued all your Jeff Wilson shares. He is a usable RB2 for me.
Ooh, all right. I like that little nugget. Let's get to the Houston Texans and the New York Giants. The Giants had been previously one of my symbol teams of the week on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Coming off the bye, no Xavier McKinney. As a reminder, symbol is awesome. It lets you trade pro and college teams like stocks. You even earn cash dividend payouts when your teams win. And I know, because I bought the Eagles and all they've done is win. All they do is win no matter what. The perfect blend of sports and the stock market. Symbol basically took the thrill of sports betting, combined it with the profitability of the stock market to give you a platform where fortune absolutely favors the fan. It's just fun. It's just fun to see the value go up and down, fun to get the cash dividends when they win. Download the Symbol mobile app for iOS by searching S-I-M-B-U-L-L in the App Store. Make sure you use the code FANTASY so you get a free team stock valued up to $150 upon signing up. That's code FANTASY to claim your free stock on the Symbol mobile app. All right.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Giants, Texans, Joe, go.
There is one story to follow in this game. First and foremost, Brandon Cooks was at Texans practice on Wednesday, not participating. So there's a wrist injury, the personal issues, we know that. We got to follow that in Nico Collins. But there is one major thoroughfare that I'm going to explore here with this game on both sides, and it's the run game. According to our fantasy points data, both the Texans and the Giants have top 5 run game matchups on the week. The Giants' run defense has gotten better since Leonard Williams came back from the elbow injury. However, the Giants have given up the most non-quarterback yards before contact per rushing attempt over the last 5 weeks. Damian Pierce, by the way, the Texans aren't even opening holes for him, and it doesn't matter. He's just breaking tackles every week. You saw, I mean, the Eagles were very content to just say, all right, Dameon Pierce, you're going to run on us, but you're not going to make big plays, and we're going to win. We're going to win that way. It worked, but Dameon Pierce has a great matchup this week. So does Saquon Barkley. Like the Texans, the Giants' offensive line is underperforming in the run game, but the matchup is too good to ignore. Houston has allowed over 100 yards and multiple rushing scores to running backs over the last 3 weeks, in each of the last 3 weeks, including Derrick Henry going for over 202 touchdowns. Miles Sanders and Kenny Gainwell both scored last week. Josh Jacobs scored three times 3 weeks ago. This is very obviously a juicy, juicy, juicy matchup for Saquon Barkley, who is going to be uber chalky on the DFS slate in this matchup. Especially since Christian McCaffrey's not on the main slate, by the way.
What about the Giants on offense?
It's Saquon. Wandale Robinson is somebody who I was disappointed by in the week before the bye. He's still a bench hold for me. Kenny Golladay is returning to practice. Whatever he gives them is a bonus for the Giants at this point.
New Orleans is in Pittsburgh, Joe.
Oh, this is going to be a rip snorter. New Orleans, the total's 40 here. 2.5 is New Orleans giving. It's a bad football team. Michael Thomas is out for the year. Jarvis Landry couldn't play, although Jarvis Landry is a solid bench stash. You know about Alvin Kamara. I don't understand why they don't get this is where we're at right now with New Orleans. Taysom Hill has been like the bane of my existence for 5 years, and now I'm asking why they don't get him more involved, because they don't have weapons. Pittsburgh did swing a trade for a corner, William Jackson, who I think is going to come in and play left corner for them, but he could be in and out of the lineup. I think that's good news for Chris Olave in this game. One more thing for Pittsburgh. Over the last 5 weeks, they have generated by far the least pressure in the NFL on the lowest percentage of snaps. That probably changes if TJ Watt is back this week and makes this a much more difficult matchup for Andy Dalton and the Saints. But man, that Saint offense, that Saint defense, that Saint team is really hard to watch right now. Oh, and by the way, they don't have a first round pick next year.
Brutal. Steelers.
Okay, a couple of
Jalen
things.
Jalen Warren time.
Yeah, so I think Warren's going to get more involved. I don't know if Tomlin's going to bench him, but I think you can use Warren in a I don't know if Tomlin's going to bench Najee Harris, rather. You could use Warren in a flex right now. The guy who I think benefits the most from the trade of Chase Claypool to the Bears, remember Chase Claypool was their primary slot receiver. The guy who I think benefits the most is Pat Freiermuth, the tight end. I think he becomes their primary interior receiver. They got Steven Sims. They got Olszewski. I don't think either one of those guys is going to make much of an impact at all. I think Pat Freiermuth is the guy who benefits the most from that deal. And also, a matchup I'm looking at here. Over the last 5 weeks, per our fantasy points data, the corner who has given up the most fantasy points per coverage snap by far is Paulson Adebo, the left corner for the Saints. That's George Pickens, typical alignment. I think George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth are the big beneficiaries from Chase Claypool being out and narrowing this target tree.
I'm really interested in the Jalen Warren, Najee Harris thing. Really
I mean, it doesn't take a trained set of eyes to see that Warren's looked more explosive. Now, the question is that Najee's foot or is that Najee's mentality that's kind of broken? Because I remember when this happened to Trent Richardson and it was hard to swallow. Hard to swallow.
Very. Last but not least, Broncos at the Titans, Joe.
The Broncos coming out of the bye, getting a little bit of momentum in the London game. Does this help things going forward? Russell, I'm not saying Russell Wilson was good, but Russell Wilson was better in that game. The problem for the Broncos' run game is they've added a third bad running back to it. Now you got Melvin Gordon, you've got Latavius Murray, and you've got Chase Edmonds. I don't know what they're going to do with Edmonds, but Miami couldn't wait to get rid of him in the Bradley Chubb trade. Who knows if they work him in there? Right now, if you play Gordon or Latavius Murray, you've got to hope they score. Fortunately, both of them have been doing that. So they're both kind of flex options for me. Here is the thing that's been kind of puzzling for Denver, and there might be an explanation for it. After catching at least four passes for 52 yards in each of the Broncos' first five games, Courtland Sutton went into the week 9 bye with just six catches for 50 yards on 16 targets over the last three games for the Denver Broncos, which has coincided with the debut of the rookie tight end Dulcich, who quickly has become the apple of Russell Wilson's eye. And things will not get easier for Sutton this week. He lines up as Denver's left wide receiver about 50% of the time. That is on the same side where the Titans play Christian Fulton, who, the third-year corner, he's been one of the most underrated corners in the NFL this season, limiting opposing wide receivers to the third fewest fantasy points per coverage snap over the last 5 weeks.
Wow.
So I think Dulcich and Jerry Jeudy have really kind of become the guys that Russell Wilson has trusted over the last 3 weeks. Let's see if that continues out of the bye.
How about the Titans on offense?
The Titans didn't have a wide receiver catch a pass. Now, that was mostly on Malik Willis, but you would figure that Patrick Surtain is going to shut down Robert Woods, even if Ryan Tannehill's back. The Titans are the Derrick Henry show. That is the one guy you can consider on this team. Nobody else is worth considering.
No one else is worth considering as my co-host. Absolutely love Joe Dolan at FG_Dolan. Still have 5 games to get to on part 2 of the Fantasy Feast. I'm full, but I still got room for dessert.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, Business of Sports, and the College Draft. All available at Apple Podcasts, RossTucker.com, or wherever podcasts can be found.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.